you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Cosner. 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 Okay, I'm ready. Better get some corticosteroids to treat your auricular fracture, because this is Brooklyn Nine-Nine, the podcast.
From Universal City, California, this is a Brooklyn Nine-Nine podcast special, part one, presented by NBC, featuring Dan Gore, Luke Del Tredici, Melissa Fumero, and Mark Evan Jackson.
Welcome to Brooklyn Nine-Nine, the podcast. I'm Mark Evan Jackson. I play Kevin. Today we're talking about Brooklyn Nine-Nine in general, past, present, and future. But first, I want to talk about you, the viewer, the fan. If this were The Good Place, I'd be moved to say that we motherforking love you motherforkers. Good heavens, are you great. So curious, so funny, so smart, so informed, so diverse, and so engaged. All of that said, let me begin by breaking your hearts. This, as of this moment, is a one-off podcast. It would be very difficult to go back five seasons of Brooklyn Nine-Nine and do a weekly episode-by-episode podcast. But you should know that there is, based on your verve, your enthusiasm as fans, interest on our end about doing something. This, today, is a start. We love the show, and it's clear that you love or ship or stan or other things I don't understand about this show. And it seems like maybe, just maybe, it's something that we should talk about. My guests today are executive producer, co-creator, and showrunner Dan Gore, executive producer Luke Del Tredici, and Melissa Fumero, who plays Amy Santiago. Melissa, Luke, and Dan, welcome. Cool, cool, cool. No doubt. No doubt. Thanks for being here, you guys.
Wow.
That was amazing. It was like watching a master at work.
It really was.
I felt a little bit like I was in the Sistine Chapel and Michelangelo dipped a brush into a vat of paint.
Note to self, let's do podcast the podcast and just talk about podcasts. Dan, there's already too much to talk about, but let's start at the beginning. What was the pitch for Brooklyn Nine-Nine? Who was involved? Where did you start?
This was around 6 years ago now. I was working on a show called Parks and Recreation.
Heard of it.
It was on NBC.
Yep.
With a guy named Mike Shore.
Mm-hmm.
He's a producer, writer, currently doing a show called The Good Place.
He's all right.
Anyway, so Mike and I were working on the show, and we decided we wanted to create a new show together. And we would meet every morning for breakfast. We'd sit in his office, and we would chew and discuss what we wanted the show to be about. And pretty quickly, we came up with the idea of making it a show about cops, mm-hmm. a funny show about cops. One of the things we really liked about it was it had a lot of the same sensibility of Parks and Recreation, but it was sort of easier in terms of the exposition and the in to any episode because people immediately understood all of the cop stories.
The police procedural aspects of like problem and solution, right?
Right. It was such a shortcut. So mm-hmm. whereas with Parks and Recreation, if Leslie Knope came in and said, "We need to do an environmental impact report," you had to explain what an environmental impact report was. You had to explain what the stakes were, et cetera. Whereas in this show, you could tilt down off of a thing that said 99th Precinct. You could have the lead character walk in and say, "There's been a murder." And you knew instantly what you were getting into.
An environmental impact report. I wasn't listening. Luke, have you been involved since the very beginning?
Knotts is the pilot. I came on after the pilot, so it was made. So I don't get to take credit for anything that happened in the pilot. But everything after that, I will.
Is all you.
Yeah, all me. I will vulture 100%.
I looked into your credits, and you and I actually worked on the same thing in 2003. Do you know what I'm referring to?
I do. You were my very first job. VH1's Illustrated. With a hyphen between the ill and the illustrated.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wait, what?
It's an animated sketch show, which is stupid and impossible.
Animated sketch comedy. Pop culture sketch comedy with about a 9-month lead time, I believe, for the sketches to come out to be drawn. It was horrible. But I do remember, yeah, I met you on my first day.
How about that? Melissa, what was your first, this was, I'm sure, just a fairly standard audition process at first. What did you know?
Yeah, it was just an audition. And I don't remember who was even there at the first audition. Might have just been Allison Jones.
Probably just casting.
Like an assistant, yeah.
Yeah.
And I did it and had fun with it. Amy was a completely, she was very different early
in what way?
On. She was more just like a badass detective. She was like very confident. Like none of the sort of awkwardness or nervousness was there in like the early sides. I remember that.
Right. I guess it was more, there was a lot of competition, right?
Because you very competitive with Jake. And
that's interesting. Do you think we saw something in you? That we
I sort of always assumed that I was so nervous during that rehearsal week before we shot the pilot that I felt like the writers were just watching me and going, oh, she's so awkward when she's nervous. And just like putting that in the scripts, because every script that came out was like a little bit more of that. And I was like, God, play, just chill out, Melissa. Just go to rehearsal tomorrow and try to be a little more confident. But it all worked out in the end.
We were just sitting there going like, oh God, no. Did we screw it all up? And we would just watch you and go like, oh my God, she's amazing.
That's not true.
So at what point was, the pitch existed before Andy Samberg was attached,
right.
Conceivably, right?
Right.
And
right.
Then that had to be kind of a great spur towards moving things forward.
Yes, once Andy got attached, yeah. So I don't know how much nitty gritty you want to get into, but we sold the pitch.
The fans are into it, so go Knits, go Grits.
All right, go Knits and Grits. Mike and I pitched it to all of the networks, and there was a lot of interest, which was great. And I was going to say that one network sent us donuts, but that doesn't really...
You have said it. I heard it.
It happened. In Hollywood, that's a sign of great interest.
Is that true?
No, but I think it's because it was a cop show. They were like, isn't this cute? We're sending you donuts.
I get it.
Anyway, a long story short, we pitched it to a bunch of places, and one of the stipulations in getting picked up was we wanted them to hire a casting director for us before we had written the pilot, even. And so Fox agreed to that, and they hired Allison Jones, who's really the greatest comedy...
Gold standard, right?
Gold standard of comedy casting directors. And so we started having meetings really early on we met with Terry Crews, mm-hmm. which is why the character ended up being named Terry Jeffords. We instantly were like, oh, Terry Crews, we've got to have him on the show. But the point is that Andy was not associated with it at first. And then we found out that he was leaving SNL, and Mike and I got a meeting with him. It was actually the most Hollywood experience I've ever had, because he and The Lonely Island were renting a place in the Hollywood. They still lived in New York. They were renting a place in the hills to record an album. And so we showed up at like this mansion that had a recording studio in it. And they were like,
amazing.
Guys, do you want to hear a track we just laid down? And we were like, yes. And so we sat there and they like rapped a track. I think it was Diaper Money. Mm-hmm. I think is what it was.
Oh, wow.
And we watched that and they're like, what do you think? And we're like, oh, this is great. It was so fun to see live.
Yeah.
And then Andy, Mike, and I went over to the pool of this place that they were renting.
Like a 5-minute walk.
Yeah, it was like a 5-minute walk. We sat by the pool and we pitched the series to him, which was slightly different at that point. Mm-hmm. It started in a slightly different way, but the character was kind of similar. And we spent all this time talking about who Jake Peralta was. And then Andy was like, wait, it's McNulty from The Wire, but comedy. It's comedy McNulty. And we're like, yeah, it's comedy McNulty. And it was like instantly he had understood what it was. And he was like, I was thinking of taking a break from TV, but this sounds great. Let me think about it and talk about it and get back to you. And then very quickly he was on board.
Let's talk for a minute about what a monster Andy Samberg is. Like, kidding aside, when I first met him in the audition process for Brooklyn Nine-Nine, I was going into the meeting and I thought, like, oh, he might not be great. Like, he's been famous since he was a kid, basically. Like, that ruins a lot of people. He's aggressively great. Like, I really like that guy.
It's annoying.
Yeah.
Yeah. I enjoy when he gets, like, a little bit cranky because maybe he needs some coffee.
It's rare, right?
Enjoy that, yeah, though? I do. I actually do because he's lovely so much of the time.
I love how lovely he is, and I don't like it when anyone's cranky.
Sure. Oh, well.
No, but I mean,
I enjoy it. It's like I enjoy watching Terry eat cookies. Like,
yes, yeah, well, that I enjoy.
I don't know what that says about me.
Everyone should watch Andy on Finding Your Roots.
Oh, my God, wasn't that incredible?
Because I really think that's like a very good, it's the Henry Louis Gates Jr. show, and they go and they look, they find out Andy's mom is adopted, and he wants to find out who her family is, and they go and look into it, and it is a very good approximation of what Andy is like off camera.
Yes.
Wow.
Very much so.
I don't know that. I've got to check it out. So in building the show, strong choices were made. It's interesting to hear you say that you brought in a casting director before the pilot script was even written.
Yes.
Like you were that's unusual.
That is unusual. Yeah. I think, you know, Mike had a lot of sway because of Parks and Rec, and so that helped give us a little leverage, but we felt like on the shows that we had worked on, like The Office and Parks and Rec, having a strong ensemble was so critical to the success of the show and to the writing of the show, to have actors that you were writing towards. Mm-hmm. And so we wanted to sort of get that process started as early as possible. And she just has really impeccable taste and such a great track record.
Talk about the building of the squad room. Like when you're casting the principals in this, this show is unusual for its inclusivity and diversity. And that obviously had to be something that you staked early on and said, this is something that we want to put on television.
Yes. I mean, one of the reasons we chose Brooklyn and one of the reasons we chose the NYPD is that the NYPD is itself incredibly diverse. And also Brooklyn is incredibly diverse. And so we wanted a workplace and a world in which that workplace was set that had diversity at its very core, where it felt very natural. And then when we auditioned people, we really weren't auditioning people based on any sort of racial profile. We were just auditioning, as one of the nice things about cops is cops come in all shapes, colors, genders, sexual orientations.
Are you suggesting police officers are people?
Well, we might not want to go down the road of how people feel about police officers. But yes, there's a wide range of police officer types. And so we thought that this was a great opportunity, and we auditioned a ton of great actors and actresses. And as a result, we didn't set up to have one or two Latina leads. And then we had two fantastic women who auditioned who both happened to be Latina. And so it was just a no-brainer to cast both of them. But in so doing, we ended up with this like unusually diverse cast. Mm-hmm. But that, in a way, was our intention, but it wasn't. But at the same time, it was just the happy result of getting the best people.
It shouldn't be unusual, but it is, and it stands out. And I hear about it on the regular, and I imagine, Melissa, it's something that you get feedback on, and it has to be very meaningful to you.
Oh, yeah. Well, especially 6 years ago, it was unheard of to have two Latina women on a show. Yeah. And Stephanie and I were just mentally preparing ourselves all the time. Like, they're probably going to get rid of one of us. Like, this just
are those nobody. Conversations you had, really?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Gina Rodriguez is a mutual friend of ours. And she, when we both got cast, she connected us through, when we were all on Facebook or something. And she was like, hey, I know both of you and you've booked this show and I wanted to put you guys in contact. So yeah, we would have these that now looking back seems so silly. Like for our first table read for Network, we were like, we should wear our hair differently.
That's so funny.
That Network doesn't think that we look sure. too similar or feel too similar because we're both Latin. And mm-hmm. Steph was like, great, great idea. I'm going to wear my hair curly. I was like, great, I'm going to wear my hair straight. And and yeah, we were amazed because there was no other show doing
crazy
that.
Crazy thing is, after that read, the Network was like, I love that you have a straight-haired person. I love that you have a curly-haired
this
person.
This show
you're
is
welcome.
So diverse.
Yeah. You're welcome.
I remember being
so stupid, but it's like, but it's also amazing that 6 years later, it doesn't feel as crazy or weird. You know, I think that there's a lot more shows that, you know, have
owing, I would argue, to Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Like, I mean, as a standard bearer, as a trendsetter in that regard, showing that it's possible. That the two authority figures in the precinct are African-American men, mm-hmm. one of whom is gay. Like 6 years ago today, like that's not common to see on television. Yeah. And I think that representation is meaningful. I get stopped in airports about it all the time.
And especially that these Latinas, too, we're not playing into any stereotypes. Like, every time I get a tweet from a young girl who's like, I'm Cuban and nerdy and love books and yeah. I'm a terrible dancer and I've never been able to relate to a character more, it's like, I just start crying.
Oh, I mean,
you know, because
it hits home, right?
Like, yeah.
I think we all know what that feels like to feel like an outsider.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally.
Says the whitest man on the planet.
From a writing perspective, it's really great because you, having two African-American, having two, like, Latina characters, it takes the pressure off having to write anyone as representative of an entire, like, I think sometimes there's a feeling if you have just, like, if we just had, like, Melissa and not Stephanie, or we just had Andre and not Terry, there's a tendency to, like, they are, like, standing in for an entire race or an entire gender or whatever, and with two Latina characters, you're like, they're just people, you know? Right. Neither one of them has to, like, fully encompass the entire...
Are you suggesting Latinas are people?
But, you know, I'm sorry.
I'm noticing a theme here.
Yeah. I'm having a memory of the 99th episode party with a big cake and stuff in the bullpen. And I think I was shooting an episode that week.
You would have been invited to the party anyway, though.
That's not true.
Well, to serve the cake.
I could barely get here today. It was emotional. Mike Schur said a few words. You said a few words. And yeah. you prefaced it by saying, like, I'm going to see if I can get through this. Like,
yeah, I'm a big crier.
Is that true?
Yes.
Oh,
and I think I turn around and not face the
Yes,
cry?
I think at first you did. Yeah.
I'm very nostalgic and I'm a big crier. Like, just thinking about it now is making me tear up. I couldn't look at Andy. I don't think I could look at any of our cast members. And then there's a woman who was our executive at Fox, and she had just left the show and she was back for that. And I couldn't, Lauren Neustadter, I couldn't look at Lauren Neustadter because she had also put her blood, sweat, and tears into it.
Yeah.
I could look at Luke.
Yeah.
Luke was just
standing. When feeling emotional,
I've
just look
never
at Luke.
Seen
it works
Dan
every
cry.
Time.
The idea that he's a big crier,
Is this news to you?
Yeah.
Legitimately.
You saw me cry. I cried at the 99th thing. I was like, I was a wreck.
Yeah. I'm just saying, I don't feel like in any of our interactions have ever been meaningful or personal enough for you to cry. And now I'm hearing this is like a defining characteristic of yours.
I think you should deal with this off air.
All right.
I think this is for later.
Luke was just in the corner giving me the finger the whole time. Kept yelling, first one was the weakest. First one was the weakest.
Dan, you mentioned Fox. There came a time at which Brooklyn Nine-Nine no longer had a home on Fox. What was that like?
It was scary. It was a little bit scary to find out that all of a sudden we weren't going to be on the air. And
where were you when you got the news?
I was what we call pooping.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
Yeah. I thought I was going to hear indisposed or disposed.
That's actually perfect.
I'm a person. Yeah.
That's perfect.
Are you suggesting you're a person?
Yes. I am. I'm suggesting I'm a person. Hello, Raymond.
It's pretty good. Yeah.
Is that me?
Yeah,
is that
that's
me?
You.
Oh my God, no, really?
Yeah. No, really? That's not me. Raymond. Okay. Yeah, I was in the bathroom. I thought, I know what this call is.
Really?
And I could wait and call them back. And I thought, no, you know what? This will be my little protest. It's a little bit like, did you guys ever see that UCB sketch, Ass Pennies?
No.
Well, it's a great sketch. I'm not going to go into... Everyone should Google it and watch it.
Will you play all the roles right now? Audio only.
This is Besser.
No.
Okay. So prior to that, our people, our agents and David Miner, who's a very important non-writing producer on the show, had said, hey, there's actually a chance that you're not going to get picked up. And so we were somewhat fortified. It wasn't like a total shock.
For you.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Some of us were blindsided.
Goop.
Is that true?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, I guess as the week wore on, because it was like that week before upfronts, you know, each day that passed, you're like,
That's a meeting in New York where they announce the fall schedule, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So they would have to have decided.
And the Fox one is always on Monday.
Okay.
So you know you're going to find out by Friday because then they have to fly everybody over the weekend and, you know, blah, blah, blah. So it was like, I think Thursday came and I was like, this isn't good. We haven't heard anything.
No news is not
good
news.
We have found out on a Thursday.
Right, so maybe Wednesday.
So maybe it was Wednesday or something, because I was flying to New York on Thursday, and I found out when I landed.
It would have been awkward if you'd... you were already flying. I was going to say, if you'd gone to the airport, and they were like, this ticket has been canceled.
Oh, yeah. I wasn't... but I was going for to do a game show.
Right.
And when I landed, I texted my husband that I landed, and he called me immediately, which he never does. But we have a small child, so I immediately thought, like, maybe...
Disaster.
Something, yeah.
Yes, of course.
And... yeah, and then he told me, because, yeah, I guess all the agents and managers were like, make sure she doesn't, you know, find out on Twitter or something.
Right,
like,
right.
But on the other hand, whereas Melissa was sadly in the dark and I felt terrible about it, the producers knew that the studio was intent on making sure that the show continued to exist.
Okay.
And so right from the start, the conversations we were having were things like, okay, Fox it's not going to be on Fox, but we're going to find it a home.
Okay.
And that, I mean, obviously they weren't saying anything promissory, like it's definitely going to happen. And I think I did send an email to the cast saying, or Andy did?
You sent an email.
Andy and I were in cahoots, not before, but after it happened.
Andy did text a couple things to the group chat.
That were like, don't were totally like, panic, there's a chance.
Yes, there's a chance.
There's that, a group
Andy
chat?
And I were in cahoot.
So this happened then, what's it called? The internet went bonkers.
Yeah, that was the most gratifying and unexpected aspect of this whole thing. I mean, it really was totally shocking and wonderful. And I mean, in a way, it was like, okay, well, if we don't come back, at least we know that we were really meaningful to a large group of people. And it was so heartwarming. I mean, Luke, didn't you feel, were you surprised by it? I know you're sort of an egoist.
Did you get emotional?
No. No, I mean.
Did you give it the finger?
We always felt very appreciated, and even if it had ended last year, we got to make over 100 episodes. I never felt anything other than, like, so thankful to have gotten to, like, work on the show and make the show, but...
And to fix it from the pilot.
But I did, you know, I think we all felt a little bit like the last, like, it's understandable in the, like, media landscape where there's all these, like, every 2 months, there's, like, a brand new show that's the most experimental and daring and coolest thing that's ever been on TV before.
Right.
And a new show comes out, and that's what everyone writes about, and we were just sort of plugging away, and it felt a little like, do people watch the show? The ratings aren't great. We knew people liked it and streamed it, but we didn't ever feel like we were getting a lot of feedback about, like, how it was going over. And then suddenly there was just this flood of people being like, I look forward to it every week. It's something that, like, I can't imagine living without. It's like, you know, people talking about it, getting them through tough times. And it was just like, as Dan said, it made me feel like, you're like, okay, it was worth it. It was all the time that we spent making this show was worth it.
Yeah.
It turned me into a monster because I couldn't stop. Like, I wanted to read everyone's tweets.
Yeah.
And my wife was like, you have a family. And I was just like glued to the phone.
Well, you're pushing the feel-good button, the fun button, right? Like, you want to reach through Twitter and give that person a hug for the degree to which they love the show.
Yeah. And there were people, I felt like people wanted to say it and they wanted us to hear it and I wanted to hear it. Yeah. And I was happy they said it.
Yes.
So 27 or so hours go by and then what happens?
I'm back in the bathroom. No, you know, a lot of it was opaque to us. And by us, I mean, like, me and Luke and Minor, probably less so, but also and Andy. But a lot of it was the studio. Perlina, who runs the studio, really just put the show on her back and, like, went out there and sold the show. And so we were getting updates about who was in the running and
networks, potential homes?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then... But, you know, very, not much more than what anyone else was hearing. I mean, I read on Deadline, I don't know if
we've plugged everything else. I think you can say Deadline.
I mean, they should give us a little
promotional consideration if, you know, is potentially furnished by Deadline.
No, I read it on the internet like everyone else that Hulu had passed. And I was...
Okay. Yeah. That had been... I think we were sort of thinking that was the natural home for it to go to.
Okay.
Because it's where the show streams and it does well there. And
also it's what happened to Mindy. When Mindy got canceled, it went to Hulu. And so it just felt like there was a template for that.
Mm-hmm.
And it felt like, really, is a network going to take another show in its sixth season? And then just hours later, they did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which was unbelievable.
I think the pickup by NBC was better than the cancellation by Fox. Thoughts?
Yeah.
It was more of a positive thing.
Yeah. I think it's a fair statement.
Mm-hmm.
It's not crazy or radical.
But it couldn't have happened without the other. So it's a chicken and egg thing.
Mm-hmm.
The pickup came immediately with pressure. The cancellation had...
Yeah, cancellation was like, people love you and you don't have to work anymore.
Yeah, it was kind of great.
And then this was
immediately after they announced. It was all happening so late, we were like, we're going to be back in 7 days in the writer's room, you know, or something. Right.
I feel like we had a little more time than that.
We had so little time.
Yeah.
Now, I'm reminded with your saying that, Luke, that it seems like when it was announced, it felt like maybe NBC was buying 13 to allow you to wrap up some storylines, right? Isn't that what it felt like initially?
That may have been what the perception was, but they were very clear with us that they were interested in Brooklyn as an ongoing concern.
Wow.
That it was not a wrap-up thing
okay.
at all.
I know we're just a couple of episodes now into season six. Are you here now willing to announce the pickups of season seven and eight?
I'm willing to, but it hasn't happened.
Oh.
But I am willing
okay,
to do
good,
it.
Okay, good, good, good.
I mean, maybe it has happened.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Who knows? All our phones are off.
We're in the past.
Also, yeah.
We're not actually recording this.
We're in the past.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I've gotten nothing from the group chat, which is, that seems strange.
Yeah, just keep checking.
Yeah.
Andre is not on our group chat.
Shh. Does he know that? Did you just let a cat out of a bag?
I might have. No, I feel like we've talked about the group chat so much that we started feeling awkward about
it. We ended up writing a story where Charles was off of the group chats because of leaving Dan off of the group chats, but maybe Andre took it as personal.
Maybe.
I don't think he's a big podcast guy. I think you're safe.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to hear this.
Did he have a...
he's not on Twitter.
Did he have a period...
Well, he's secretly on Twitter.
Did he have a... Oh, now this is
oh my God,
too.
There are so many cats in this bag.
Bombs.
Yeah.
No one will find him on Twitter. He's got like a, you know, one of the egg is his profile.
This is a great challenge for Brooklyn Nine-Nine Nation.
It's true. Find my man, Andre Brower. You've built a world that's, you know, complicated, funny, flawed, wonderful people who care about one another. Did you set out to be a meme factory when you started this show?
What if I said yes?
I would love it.
No. Were memes really even a thing people were calling out when we started the show?
You know the things I'm talking about. I'm talking about...
yeah, like memes and GIFs.
But
we're
like
very
toit and smort and noise.
No, I think that we always set out to make Mike and I, and I think Luke as well, really believe in having big comedic moments in each episode. And I don't think we necessarily... specifically write to those moments, but we're very conscious of trying to have those moments. And also, I think it really plays into the toit and the noise and the smort and all that stuff. I don't think we set out with the intention of making these memeable things. I think it has to do with there's something about Andy specifically.
Delivery on some of it, right?
Yeah. And then
I also just think we're a show that tries to tell jokes. I mean, that's always been the thing that the show prioritizes, you know, underneath everything else that we're trying to do is like we want it to be funny and we want to write jokes and we spend a long time trying to write good jokes. And I think good jokes become memes or become GIFs. And, you know, I mean, I think that's really what it is. I always take it as just a like the quality of the cast, all the GIFs and stuff. It's just like our cast is so great. And so many of the like GIFs are just like, are just reaction shots because everyone on the cast is like, is so good at that. And then second, I think it's just, we try to pack every episode full of jokes. And if you do that enough, some of them will hit. And
that's an editor's dream, right? To have a cast that you know you can cut to any, like Scully, Hitchcock, any, like anybody, and you can have something, you know, there's going to be, everybody's working the whole time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Melissa, do you have a favorite title of your sex tape?
Oh, a lot of ice coming out of that box.
Oh, no. A cold blast of air, right?
Or something
coming
out
of that box.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah, that would, I remember, made me laugh. Yeah. Now, how do you get away? The other ones.
How do you get away with those? And is the world different on NBC now than Fox? Is standards any different, or can you do it?
I mean, the only standards difference is we are allowed to, and we're trying not to overdo it. Some of us are trying to overdo it. I nodded subtly at Luke.
In Luke's direction, I noticed. We all saw it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They allow us to bleep and blur, whereas Fox did not allow bleeps or blurs.
Interesting.
But I think, for instance, with the cold blast of air coming out of that box, I think that contextually, before the sex tape joke is made, it's contextually completely clean.
And there probably is a box in evidence, right?
Or at least, I don't remember what the...
Is that from Halloween?
I feel like it was Wunsch related.
Yes, I think it was. And I think you're right.
I don't remember.
It's so terrible. And then, of course, in episode 601, this B needs a C in her A.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God.
One of my most favorite jokes we've ever done. Favorite jokes.
I don't feel like people have pointed out enough how insane it is that Amy was saying, this babe needs a coconut in her arm.
Yeah.
As the thing she
I think
saying.
I did say that on set. I was like, in her arms?
This has been a Brooklyn Nine-Nine podcast special. Join us again for part two, where we take questions from you, the fans. Follow the show at NBC Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Hosted by Mark Evan Jackson. Produced by Grant Rutter. Edited by Trey Booty. Catch full episodes on NBC.com and the NBC app.